Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're turning our attention to popular automation apps on smartphones. They can be very useful, but they can also be used to track and harass people in domestic abuse situations. What can be done about it? Well, we're going to find out as we talk with two guests for you today. With us, Kasam Fawaz, an associate professor and associate chair for research for the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at UW-Madison. Kasam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Also in the studio with me, Rahul Chatterjee is an associate professor of computer science at UW-Madison. He runs the Madison Tech Clinic, which supports survivors of domestic and intimate partner violence. Rahul, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Larry.
As we talk with our guests, I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts. What do you want to know about security issues related to automation apps? Has someone hacked into your phone maybe and harassed you or given you some problems? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Raul, let's start with you. You're heavily involved with the Madison Tech Clinic. You oversee it, as a matter of fact. Let's talk about what it is and what it does.
Yeah, so I created Madison Tech Clinic when I moved here right before COVID. I sent a cold email to Domestic Abuse Intervention Services, DAIS, which is the largest domestic violence support service here, to about technology abuse. I have been doing that work during my PhD, and I want to continue here. And then COVID happened, no much communication. And then long after nearly 9 or 10 months, they responded like, we are excited, we want to partner, we want to do something. So, and that's when around 2021, I created this Madison Tech Clinic. The goal was to, that technology is so much intertwined with our life. It's great, it helps us in many ways, but it can be also abused. And one of the biggest challenges when a domestic violence situation, a domestic partner is abusing, all the technology you have built are assuming that that they are safe against someone probably far away land, but we did not consider the threat of a domestic violence situation. So that's where we created, understand about these challenges, we created some protocols, and the goal was, if the domestic violence survivors are, and it is very frequent, over 90% of the cases, we see technology is being used as a mean for spying and harassing survivors. So this clinic, survivors come, talk to us, and we kind of help them create this online safety and technology safety so that they can continue using technology like everyone else. And we are now working with lots of partners all around Wisconsin. So there is a in-person clients, survivors can talk to us in Madison, but if they're far away, they can also call us in. We do this consultation over Zoom. We scan their devices. We understand their technology profile and then help them safety plan.
Wow. So what kind of, maybe Kasam, I'll ask you, what kind of information can be assessed by someone through an automation app? And maybe, you know, is where what is an automation app? Let's get that out of the way, too.
Oh, that's a great question. An automation app is this sort of a platform that allows you to do if then else. People are very busy and they don't want to be reminded to do everything. So what they want to do is, when I check in my apartment, I want the thing to happen. When I wake up, I want that thing to happen. When I'm visiting that location, I want something else to happen. So for this to happen, this automation app needs to know some information and it needs to do some actions. Now, of course, if you trust the automation app, that should be okay. But if someone wants to know your location or wants to read your email or wants to read your messages, they can set up these automation recipes or automation shortcuts, and they can get access to that kind of information right away. For example, a benign or a good shortcut would be, if I'm visiting that location, I want, for example, to turn on an alarm, for example. when an attacker can flip this and can flip this automation right away. When I wake up, I want this location to be sent to this number, mm-hmm. which means that whoever owns that number will get the location of the victim. And that's not something that the designers of these automations have anticipated. That's not something the actual user has anticipated. And if somebody, and Rahul can talk more into this because they have seen that in practice, if somebody wants to scan the phone and see what's going on, it's very hard to detect these things without some technical ability.
Oh, and Rahul, I remember reading somewhere that you learned that a client's cell phone was being controlled by their domestic abuser. How did you learn that?
It's pretty frequent in our clinic when we talk to the clients. We look at many types of compromise. Like one of the things is like in domestic relationship, it's very normal people to share devices, share passwords, share accounts. And that's completely fine until it is in the situation of domestic violence where the same access can be used to spy or harass. So in one of our cases, without going into details, it was more on someone was using this automation app to harass the survivor. They were closing certain applications, preventing them from using their phone normally. And it was pretty surprising for me because I have not thought about automation. I've been working on this field a long time. I did not think about automation. I'm also not an iPhone user, so I just did not come across that often.
Well, Kasem, are you an iPhone user?
No.
Oh, I'm laughing, but it's not a laughable situation in a way, but... think about iPhones. They pride the company, just prides itself on its security and all that.
That's true. It's not technically a security vulnerability in iPhone per se. It's just an abused property. Like any technology can have good uses, we like them, but they can be abused to do something bad. And this is not just an iPhone problem. There are automation platforms that do exist on Android. They do exist on Pixel. They do exist on Samsung devices. For example, Samsung devices have Bixby routines. They have very similar problems. You have Tasker on Android, also has very similar problems. So it's not just an iPhone problem, really.
Well, so how vulnerable are we? How is anyone for this?
So you need a physical access to the device to install or configure these shortcuts or automation recipes, we call. So shortcuts is a default application in all iPhone. You can delete the app, but it's pre-installed in phones. And the automations we call recipes. So someone needs to physical access to your phone, physically unlocked access to your phone, to be able to install these recipes. So in that way, if you keep your phone locked and close to you, it's okay. But as I mentioned before, in domestic relationship, that's not what we do. And it's fine to share devices and accounts. It's just when it is a new attack vector that survivors of domestic violence have to consider that if they have shared their devices or if their partner had access to the devices, we need to check one more thing now.
Yeah. We were just listening the hour before. They were talking about people. Often divorce came into the conversation. And I can imagine having, your wife or your husband, their access. And I guess it's fine while they're together. But then when they aren't together, Kasem, then it's pretty easy for the other person to gain control, I would guess.
Yes, that's very true. A fundamental concept that we teach in security research and we practice in security research is trust. Any security system, any security property has to be built on a basis of trust. In relationships, the trust means that whoever gets access to my devices are trustworthy. They're gonna use them in a benign way, and they're not gonna be posing any harm to me. When this relationship stops becoming a trustworthy or trusted relationship, then that trust assumption breaks. And when that trust assumption breaks, then everything can go like everything can go haywire. A person who had access to my device could have configured lots of things on my device. If I'm not very technically savvy, it's going to be very hard for me to detect them. And automations are particularly hard, and Rahul can also talk about this a little bit more. When you want to look about things that are happening on your phone, you just look at the applications. Well, these are the apps installed. These are the permissions of the apps. These are the data that these apps have accessed. But automations are not particular apps. They are, in a sense, nano apps or sub apps. You have to look at the automation app, and then you have to dig through the automation app to see all of these recipes, and then you have to dig through each recipe to see what's actually going on. And that's not very easy to do.
Well, when you sign up for, I don't even know how many apps I have on my phone. I mean, it's like pages of apps that are really nice and do a lot of things. But those apps, our apps, they know a lot of things about us that we don't even consider. Because, I mean...
Yeah.
Where we live, where we work.
Yeah.
Where we eat.
I mean, Larry, I'm pretty sure your listeners also wonder the same thing. These are very, very good apps. They're very well developed. And the engineers who develop these apps are paid a lot amount of money. Where does the money come from? Like, these apps are free. We don't pay for them. Where does the money come from? I mean, it's very straightforward. Our data is the money. To be able to get a free app, we have to give up our data. And these apps are very, let's call them curious. They access sensory data. They access data that we upload. They access sometimes data that we do not upload. They process it. They extract lots of features. And these features drive this huge advertisement ecosystem that pays these engineers their money.
and it's done from... These are typically developed, I'm thinking, not for the benefit of the actual end user in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, they are kind of trying to solve some problem of the end user. But yes, they have a motivation behind the scene. The another part, actually, the related thing is many times these apps that we see in domestic violence, these clinics, are not designed for spying or harassing on anyone. I mean, Shortcuts is not designed for spying on someone. It was designed to automate our life. But there is this feature, accidental features they have included in it that can enable stalking. I mean, AirTag is a very good example of that. When Apple created AirTag, it was for item tracking. Great application. I can track my bags through airport. But someone can slip in an AirTag in someone's purse and then track them. Or someone's car and then track the car. So, yes. This is what we call dual-use application or dual-use devices. And that's become a bigger threat in the space that I work on, like this domestic violence and intimate partner violence.
Talking with Qasem Fawaz and Rahul Chatterjee about these apps, and they're great, but they can also be used for nefarious purposes, as we're learning here. And you can join in. We'll give you a chance to do that. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can email to talk@wpr.org. A couple of emails. Alex emailed, do app designers need to take more responsibility in the design of their apps? Or is the responsibility more on the app user?
I can take that question.
Okay, go ahead, Raul.
And Qasem, you can join in. I think it's the app developers needs to take the responsibility. What we call feature can be abused. So we have been developing this like new way of seeing security and privacy. Security and privacy is not about data or device. It's about human at the end. How the safety at the end impacts the people matters. And that's why when you're developing a feature, it's not about just how good it can be for the society, we have to sit together in a room and then do a safety analysis of those features.
Yeah. Vivian in Green Bay has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. Some friends showed me, I believe, an app on Friday, OneDrive, they open it, and apparently every morning there are pictures from their history, from their past, pictures as old as 50, 60 years ago. He said it was a byproduct of Microsoft 365. I've never heard of that. I don't know if there's a risk. Where are they getting the pictures?
Very interesting, Vivian. Well, Kasem, what about that?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything nefarious going there. This is, I think, is a case of misconfigured permissions. Microsoft 365 is a valid application, and OneDrive is their cloud storage. So when somebody installed Microsoft 365 on their device, they configured OneDrive, and OneDrive asked for permission to access the storage on the device, and someone gave it that access. And then probably there was an option: do you want to back up your device on OneDrive? And that person probably chose yes, I want to back up device, and they gave it permission to access. So OneDrive got access to this data and is showing this data to the user. So this is a case of, again, it's not a malicious app, but it is a misconfigured app, I would say. Rahul, do you think there's anything else we want to add?
No, I think that is true. Probably, did you buy a laptop or a Windows computer recently? And that's probably the reason where you log into your laptop and it will ask for managing everything in your laptop where you probably had the photos which got synced, and now it's showing up on your phone.
Oh, well, I opened up Facebook this morning and I saw a photo of my daughter when she was a memory photo. It was her first day of school when she was 6 years old. And, she's soon to be 22 now, but it popped up and it was a nice thing to see. And then, but you don't think about the fact that, oh, they've been keeping all of that information over a long period of time. Well, I mean, if somebody... Vivian, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. If somebody, how do you know if somebody is actually, I guess you would know if they're blocking access somehow. Your phone suddenly is not working the way it's supposed to work, I guess.
The biggest challenge is that there are so many reasons your phone might not work.
Yeah.
Like there is no signal, there is no battery, somehow it doesn't have enough, memory. And it's very easy to conflate between non-nefarious not working of a phone versus when there is someone is spying or harassing. And we see it very frequently in our cases where the people pick up, like survivors will pick up different parts of things not working or things that may be suspicious and conflate with something that is probably normal, just a non-functioning phone. So, and that is the challenge here. Like, it's very hard to tell. I mean, in this case that I described, in this case, it was clear that something is happening, but it was extremely difficult to find what is causing that thing to happen. There is no notification. I mean, Shortcuts in this is an app that is by default in your phone. It has a very high privilege of permission already accessed, so it can do a lot of things. It does not show any notification, or it can be configured to show no notification. So you don't know what's happening behind the scene.
Kasem, you were at a security conference, gave a paper. What was your research about? Talk about that for a minute.
Well, I was in a conference talking about this paper in particular, describing the automation shortcut. So I want to give a shout out to the lead student on this project, Shirley Zhang. She was taking Rahul's course, and Rahul discussed this problem. She got very interested, and then she pushed through all of this research, and she presented that paper in the conference last week in Seattle. I was just with her along, and there was very good reception about the paper, like people in industry, people in academia, people and even some government researchers were interested in that work.
So what if... how do people, let's put it this way, how does someone protect their phone short of just turning it off and never using it, which is not going to happen? What are the ways that you can kind of protect yourself? Kasem, you want to? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll start and then Rahul can continue because there's a long list of things. I think the first thing is you have to have your phone always up to date. That's a given. You have to have strong passwords for everything. You have to have a strong PIN code for things. And you have to keep revising these pages of applications, Larry, you were talking about. Just make sure every once in a while, see what are the applications doing. Devices have privacy dashboards like Android and iOS. They tell you, well, these apps are the apps that you have. These are the last time they access this kind of data, the access to your microphone, the access to your location. And just make sure that you don't leave them unattended for a long period of time.
Yeah, Raul?
Yeah, I think that those are very good. The only thing I will add is we need to know who are we protecting our data from. At some point of time, I gave up on industry and government. And I protecting my data from them. Instead, I now focused on more imminent threats of this intimate partner violence, where someone close to me can be violent and cause a lot more harm. And in that case, the making sure your phone is locked and almost always in your, you keep it with you, is it goes a long way. So if you can prevent physical access, that prevents a lot of attacks. And the second part is turning on two-factor authentication. It's very simple, and I see so many people don't do that.
I love that. Two-factor.
It's annoying sometimes, but it protects.
Well, you know, when it comes to your bank account and
absolutely
things of that nature, it is very nice to have two-factor.
Yeah. It's not only protects, it also notifies you. It's a way to know if someone is trying to get in.
Johnny Meld, what are the most popular automation apps being used today? Gosh, there's such a variety. But which ones?
I mean, in Apple, the shortcuts. And then for Android, there are Tasker. Fortunately, Tasker is not pre-installed, so you have to install it, and it's not that simple. The UI, I mean, of course, Apple, whenever they do things, they do very well. So they test the shortcuts very well. Tasker requires a lot more technical sophistication to use it. And Samsung has a Bixby routine, which tries to be like an automation app, but its features are so limited. We found that you can hardly do spying with it.
So I want to go back to your organization. You said people can contact your organization no matter where they are, huh?
Yeah.
In the state?
In the state, they can.
Madison Tech
Clinic. Yes.
And if they type that into a search engine, are they going to get some nefarious?
Yeah.
No. If they say Madison Tech Clinic.
Yes. It's a techclinic.cs.wix.edu. We do not directly with clients. We want an advocate. So if you go to nearby domestic violence shelter and let them know, there is a high chance they already know us. If they don't, then ask them to reach out to us. And we will set up. It takes like one day, half an hour to set up a partnership.
But the results are pretty good.
Yeah. We have worked with over 140 clients so far since its inception. This year, it's very busy. This summer, we had 40 clients in last 3-4 months. So
they go. So if somebody is interested, they go to the facility. The social facility they're using.
So nearby domestic violence. So if you're in Madison, we work with almost all domestic violence services in Madison. So you can go any of them and ask for a consultation with us. And they're going to set up one. We're going to go to that location to help because of safety and privacy, all other reasons. If you're remote, you can go to nearby domestic violence shelter and then ask them to set up. So they're going to be there calling in through Zoom to us, and we'll be remotely providing support. There are equations where people still want to come down. So we had, you know, sometimes clients within 2-3 hours driving, they will just come down here. In that case, they will just, we'll host them in our department.
This is really interesting. It's too bad we have to have you guys doing this, to be perfectly honest. I'm really glad you are.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that we have to have people with your expertise and abilities But I'm glad you're there.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much for being with us today. Qasem Fawaz is an associate professor and associate chair for research for electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison. And Rahul Chatterjee, assistant professor of computer science at UW-Madison. We should get them back and do this again down the road a little bit. Thank you very much for being with us. Coming up, we're going to talk about alcohol. How much or how little are U.S. adults drinking these days, and what's it like here in Wisconsin? That next. I'm Larry Mueller.